to the next case, Rodasti Linares versus Holder. Ms. Shepard.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court and Counsel. My name is Shannon Shepard. I am here on behalf of the petitioner, Alba Rodas de Linares. The issue in this case is solely an issue of law, and that issue is whether the BIA's interpretation of the statute at issue, which was the Section 237A1H of the Immigration and Nationality Act, was unreasonable. Petitioner's position is that the interpretation was unreasonable because if it is upheld, the waiver that was created by Congress would essentially be meaningless. The waiver of removability in question here waives fraud or misrepresentation at the time of an alien's entry, whether or not it was willful, and it follows that this would also waive the underlying inadmissibility factor that was concealed. It is difficult to conceive of a case where the alien would make a misrepresentation, cutting off a line of inquiry that would not conceal some other underlying inadmissibility factor. So the way the board and the immigration judge interpreted this waiver would make it basically useless. The plain language, of the statute accepts the grounds of inadmissibility resulting from the lack of proper immigration documents. That's INA Section 212A7. And in this case, that refers to the special permission that the petitioner was supposed to have asked for before she entered the United States as an alien who was previously deported from the United States. In this case, the petitioner had been previously deported based on entry using a false passport or a passport that did not belong to her. She failed to disclose this when she applied for reentry, and based on that failure, she was admitted or readmitted into the U.S. as a lawful permanent resident in 1993. The approved visa petition that she had at the time was based on her marriage to a then lawful permanent resident who later became a U.S. citizen, and that made her otherwise admissible into the United States but for the previous deportation. Again, she should have applied for special permission to re-enter the U.S. as an alien who had been deported, but she did not. The underlying inadmissibility, which is the failure or the previous removal from the United States, and the failure to disclose that inadmissibility are inextricably linked. So again, to say that this waiver, Section 237A1H, waives one of those things but not the other makes it meaningless.
Do you have any authority for that?
Yes, there is a Supreme Court case, the INS versus Errico. We did cite that in our brief. It was referring to the predecessor version of the Immigration and Nationality Act, but the language of this particular waiver of removability was not substantively changed when the INA was redrafted or reorganized. And in that case, the Supreme Court specifically stated what I said before, that it is difficult to conceive of a situation where an alien making a material misrepresentation would not be doing so to conceal a factor of inadmissibility, and that therefore the waiver would not make sense under the interpretation that the board has given it here. And in that case, the Supreme Court also noted that if there is doubt in the correct construction of a statute in immigration, that should be resolved in favor of the alien, particularly based on the severe consequences of removal from the United States. And in a case such as this, where the petitioner has three U.S. citizen children, her fourth child is currently a Canadian citizen, and she's resided here. She's a breast cancer survivor. She's currently living with one of her daughters in Indianapolis. Those factors are the types of factors that would make her deportation or removal from the United States at this point a severe consequence that was the very type of thing that this waiver would be able to remedy. I see there were several cases cited by the government. I do believe they are distinguishable in our case because this court has held in the Gonzalez-Balderas versus Holder last year that that alien was not entitled to nunk-pro-tunk admission to reapply. The petitioner in that case had re-entered without inspection. In other words, unlike the petitioner in this case, they had crossed the border illegally, whereas this petitioner did go through the proper inspection channels, although she did fail to disclose her prior removal. But in the Gonzalez-Balderas case, the issue at question was the discretionary administrative grace, so to speak, of the nunk-pro-tunk reapplication for admission, whereas in this case, it's a statutory question of whether the petitioner is eligible for the waiver. There was also a case from the Board of Immigration Appeals, a matter of Roman, from 1988. And in that case, I believe it's distinguishable because that petitioner, or the alien in that case, was in the reverse situation. She had already entered as a lawful permanent resident, and then on a subsequent re-entry, came under an assumed name in connection with an attempt to smuggle other aliens into the United States. So, in effect, she was seeking relief that happened at a time after her entry as a lawful permanent resident, as opposed to in this case where there was a misrepresentation at the time of her entry as a lawful permanent resident that did cut off a line of inquiry as to the prior removal, but would have still, if she had had the proper waiver request at the time, you know, she would have been eligible to enter. Finally, there was speculation in the Department of Homeland Security's brief that our interpretation of this statute would open the slippery slope, whereas if the petitioner had been, I think the examples they gave were convicted of murder or terrorist acts, that they would then still be able to use this if they just failed to disclose all of those acts. And that's not what we're arguing here. What we're arguing here is that this failure cut off a line of inquiry for a ground of removable or a ground of inadmissibility that was otherwise waivable. And the examples cited by the department are not otherwise waivable. National security interests are never waivable. I see that my time is up, so I'd like to save some for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Shepherd. Ms. Corliss?
Good morning, Your Honors. Opposing counsel, may it please the court. I'm Lindsay Corliss for the respondent. Because there's no dispute that the petitioner is removable for having been inadmissible at the time of her 1993 entry into the United States, it is a purely legal issue that is before the court today on whether the agency's finding that she was ineligible for a waiver of deportability under INA Section 237A1H, whether or not that ruling was correct. And that the answer to that question is controlled by very explicit and unambiguous statutory language. INA Section 237A1H provides that the agency may, in its discretion, waive the fraud at the time of admission, but only if the alien satisfies a certain criteria. Some of that criteria is not in dispute today. The alien must have a qualifying relative, which she did, and the alien had to have been in possession of a visa when she came into the United States, which she did. The problem comes with the third criterion, which says that she had to be otherwise admissible at the time of her admission, except for the fraud at her entry. So what we're supposed to do when we're analyzing the statute is go back to 1993 and determine whether or not she was excludable on some other ground except for the misrepresentations that she made on her visa application. And it is not in dispute that at the point of her 1993 admission, she had been previously removed from the United States in 1990, so therefore she was inadmissible for having sought reentry into the United States within 5 years of her previous removal. She also was inadmissible at the time of her 1993 entry because she had been previously convicted in 1990 of a crime involving moral turpitude. Because of those other grounds of inadmissibility at the time of her entry, she was not otherwise admissible to the United States, even if we were to waive the fraud that she made in her application at the time of her admission in 1993. Opposing counsel also mentioned Errico, stating that it was inconceivable that an alien would have lied or misrepresented facts at the time of their entry if they were not doing so because they were previously inadmissible from the United States. And I just want to clarify that Errico was not dealing with an alien who was inadmissible at the time of the entry. The problem in Errico was that the alien was coming in contrary to quotas. So they were misrepresenting facts about their country of nationality in order to enter the United States. Now, if you're from a country that you would not be able to get a visa because of the quota, then it makes sense that the alien would not have been admitted. However, being from a country that you're above quota on for visas does not make you inadmissible, and that's the difference. Other areas in which it's contemplated that an alien might have made misrepresentations at the time of their entry, but they were not otherwise inadmissible, would be, say, there was a legal permanent resident who applied for a visa for their adult child. Now, one of the criteria for an adult child to receive that visa eventually would be that they remain unmarried. So an example of a time when this waiver might be used would be as if that adult child decided in the period where they're waiting for their visa to become current, they were to get married and then come to the border, and during their interview with a consul, with a consulate officer, they were to say that they were still unmarried. That would be an example of a misrepresentation that the agency would have in its discretion the ability to waive that fraud at the time of entry, because that alien was, you're not inadmissible because you're married, but they just would not have been admitted, and there's the distinction there. In this case, we're talking about a petitioner who was inadmissible on several grounds because she had come in using a fraudulent passport in 1990. She had been previously deported in 1990 after receiving a criminal conviction for a crime involving moral turpitude. So when she came to the border, when she applied for her visa and was granted that visa in 1993, she was not otherwise admissible, and therefore, if the court doesn't have any more questions, we would ask that you uphold the decision below, finding that she was ineligible for a waiver of deportability under Section 237A1H.
Thank you, Ms. Corliss. Ms. Shepard?
Thank you, Your Honors. I would just like to respond to my opposing counsel's reading of the Errico decision. And I think that her reading, while understandable, just goes to show the difficulty of this case. The examples given in Errico, where the respondents were misrepresenting their country of origin, again, cuts off a line of inquiry that would result in the investigation of the person's background and also would make them inadmissible at that time. While being from a certain country doesn't necessarily per se make one inadmissible to the United States.
That's important for the language of the statute that says otherwise inadmissible.
Right, otherwise admissible. So the person would be otherwise admissible. If there were visas available, but in the Errico case, and there was not a visa available at that time, and therefore they were not admissible. They had a ground of inadmissibility.
Right. So they fit under the waiver provision.
They would, and just
how can your client with this 1990 matter?
Because it's the same situation, Your Honor. The respondents in Errico were cutting off the line of inquiry that would allow them to enter the United States before they were able. The petitioner in this case had a five-year bar to re-enter. She re-entered after 3 years, so therefore she was not admissible at the time, similar to the alien who's waiting for their quota to come up. And I see my time is up. If there are no more questions, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Gross. The case is taken under advisement.